Hello and welcome to the Overland Journal podcast. I am your host, Scott Brady, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Matt Scott. Now, this is going to be a really fun conversation today because we talk about the overlanding game changers. So these are going to be the items, the services, the developments within overlanding that have really changed our process of travel. And that includes everything from e-visas to the Garmin inReach. But we'd also love to hear what your game changers have been. And you can reach me at scott.a.brady on Instagram with your feedback or what your list might be. So for right now, enjoy my conversation with Matt Scott on the overlanding game changers. Matt, we are finally back together the podcast table.
We're back from
reunited and it feels so good. That's right.
Yeah, so we're doing
back in Prescott.
Yeah, and we're talking about the top 10 overlanding game changers.
Yeah, which I think was a great topic you came up with. I'm like, that is a fun one because there has been so much development because of a lot of reasons, because of technology, but also because of the booming popularity of overlanding. There's more business case for people to come up with new ideas.
Yeah.
You come up with cool ideas.
It's interesting. You know, you've been around it longer than I have, but we've both been around for a bit. And even in like maybe the 15 years I've been around, it's like, you know, just seeing the, you know, the progression is really, really cool.
Yeah. You and I have seen the same thing. Cause even, I mean, you started working with us when it was in its infancy.
Yeah.
So where there just wasn't much out there. And so the few years that I started before not anything really changed.
I remember
changed.
If you saw a snorkel on a car, you would arrive at a mutual gas station and become best friends with that
That's
person.
Right. Yeah. It was the overland wave was the snorkel for many, many years. And now you can't go buy a Subaru without seeing a roof tent on it. So a lot has changed, but there's also been some really significant game changers that I think have made overlanding and travel easier, more enjoyable, all of that. So, But before we get started though, what's new with you? Like anything exciting?
I think there's always exciting stuff going
on. Yeah, I mean, Dak as well. So your puppy's good.
Yeah, you know.
Laura's awesome.
Kind of focusing on this racing thing.
Yeah.
Which I find very, just good. You know, it's nice to be competitive in something and challenge yourself a little bit. You know, it's not really related to overlanding, but it's, you know, still that pursuit of kind of driving skill, which is really fun. And
I think it's really positive for you. I see, you know, that it helps you really kind of focus on something that is totally unrelated to your business.
Yeah.
It forces you to stay fit, go to the gym.
Yeah.
It gives you that really positive outlet. I think it's good to have hobbies like that.
Yeah.
And probably like how the sailing is for me, where it's like, it's that one thing that has nothing to do with my business that I totally enjoy. So
yeah, and I
recognize. It's just a fraction of the speed. Like sailing is definitely like on this much slower, because I'm dealing with the theoretical hull speed of a 26-foot boat. So
the problem is I get in the Earth Roamer now and I have to tell myself to slow down. it's actually just, I think it's allowed me to focus in life. And I think that's maybe the lesson is, I was trying to do too much.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was sitting in my garage with Bruce Dorn, who's been on the podcast, and he said something around the lines of, Matt, I hear you say one weekend a month a lot with your toys. And I realized that there's not 20 weekends in a month.
Right.
And, you know, I've just been working to downsize like the stuff.
Yeah. It's not going to own you.
Yeah. Cause you definitely get to a point, you know, like we live in this kind of age where, you know, stuff kind of translates to Instagram or whatever. And I don't even talk about all my stuff, right? But you get caught up in it. And I think particularly coming out of COVID, where people really got into stuff because you couldn't, you know, I mean, for us, like we couldn't travel in the same way that we were used to. And now travel's become just, I mean, like really expensive for, you know, how we do it. And so we do a lot of, you know, kind of fly somewhere, rent a car and go.
Sure.
I'm just tired of the stuff, you know.
Yeah, we all come to that point in our life where we realize that it's the experiences and the people that actually bring us joy in life.
Yeah.
And if we just trim down the things to the stuff that enables spending time doing what we want to do with people that we want to do it with, then usually it all translates to a much more joyful.
It's just
joyful.
The simplification thing, you know.
We've all been through it, man. I've trimmed a lot of cars too, so I hear you.
Yeah. I mean, and the simplification, don't forget, it applies to overlanding too.
Yeah, that's right.
Stop bolting so much crap to your cars. We've made the mistake, so you don't have to.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, literally every time we say something about payload or we say something about too many things bolted to your car, it's because I have done that far too many times. And I finally learned, you know. So 20 years later, you know, I finally learned.
Yeah.
I finally learned. But we're going to talk about game changers, and not really many of these things have a lot to do with stuff. It's more things that enable the adventure that ended up on the list, although we do have a couple things
there's
on there.
A couple,
but they're pretty
things.
Affordable. Pretty for the most part. All right, so we're going to start from number 10 and work our way up to number 1. So Matt and I worked on kind of curating this list together. It's one of the things that we enjoy kind of riffing on, is what we're going to talk about in these podcasts. But the number 10 item on this list is e-visas. And it's one of the things that has been a real challenge for me over the last couple decades is, like, for example, if you want to go through Central Asia, you either have to send your passport off to a passport service in Washington, D.C. before you leave, and you need to somehow figure out what the dates are, time when you're going to come into the countries, because most of these visas are valid for 30 days. So you got to be really precise about that. And then you got to spend thousands of dollars to get that done. And you lose your passport for as long as it takes them to finish all of those visas. So, like, through the stands, I had, you know, a dozen visas that I needed to get.
Yeah.
So my passport was gone for over a month, and it cost many thousands of dollars to get the service done. The other way to do it, of course, is to go to embassies as you travel, but then you're stuck.
Which is really great if you live in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, that's right. So, like, if you're going through Central Asia on the Silk Road, then, you know, you go to the embassy for Kazakhstan when you're in Dushanbe, and you get the next visa as you're going along. But that can be also very time consuming, and it can add a lot to your expenses, because you normally have to get a hotel when you're in town. You can't be camping out in your vehicle, or it's more difficult to. So it adds a lot of complexity. Whereas in the last probably 5 years, we've seen rapid adoption of e-visa opportunities. You know, even like these new changes in Europe, which unfortunately the news totally over dramatized that whole thing. Mm. Basically, you just have to have. You have to go into a system, and you have to say who you are and what your passport is. And then you get this traveler visa that you can then use. I think it's for almost 10 years, five or 10 years, but it's a long time.
It's kind of like the travel authorization that you have to have for the U.S.
Or for going to Australia or whatever else.
I don't know if I've had to do that for Europe, but I guess I usually fly into Switzerland.
Well, it's also not active quite
yet.
Says
the pretentious guy.
I mean, Switzerland's a good place to fly into.
It's great. But for whatever reason, it's so cheap to fly to from Prescott.
Yeah, that's great. Well, that's perfect. But e-visas, like particularly on this trip that I just did in Africa, so I was able to, you know, while I was in Tanzania, I'm able to get the e-visa for Kenya now, which is very simple, costs $35. A couple days later, you get it in your email.
Yeah.
You show up to the border with a QR code. Like, literally, scan it right there at the border. It's so simple. And then it brings it up in their system. They verify your passport. They stamp your passport, and you're in minutes.
Yeah.
Even Ethiopia had e-visa. So I was able to get these things while I'm traveling and not having to always go into the main capital cities to go to the consulate or go to the embassies to get the visa. So it made it really, really simple. But it's also important to know that things don't all... E-visas don't always translate to land borders. So I'm putting a little bit of a cautionary tale out there for those that are listening around e-visas. So, for example, in Malawi, if you can get an e-visa, or you can even get a visa on arrival, but if you land at the airport, if you go to the land border,
it's a different game.
You cannot get the e-visa at the border. You cannot get visa on arrival, so you got to do it in advance. So be really careful around if it says that there's an e-visa available, that may only apply.
There may be stipulations.
Or if it says that there's visa on arrival, it may only apply at the airport. It may
I've
not
seen
apply.
It only apply to certain airports as well, because they'll only have the, you know,
the systems there, the capabilities there. So making sure that you know, like, for example, the country of Djibouti, which was the final country for the Africa trip, they have e-visa, super simple. People are starting to go to Djibouti as tourists, but the e-visa only applies for flying in. If you want to cross a land border, you have to get a traditional visa, which we had to go to in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, and took a couple days at the embassy to finally get that done. So it just, you got to make sure you're staying on top of it. But e-visas have really been a game changer for those that are traveling with a lot of flexibility in their schedule. It just makes it so much easier and less expensive in most cases.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that's a big one. All right. So the next one, Matt, this one you suggested, and I think it's totally on point.
Oh, lithium batteries.
Yeah.
I geek out on them. Yeah. Well, and I think that really on this, what we're trying to say is that there's, you know, I'm going to say the more custom solutions where you're physically buying a battery and a management system and you're installing it into your vehicle. But, you know, these new portable lithium batteries, you know, kind of the Goal Zero style or the
Jackery, any of
Jackery,
them.
Jackery, the Dometic PLB.
Yep.
You know, it's interesting for me, particularly for, you know, just let's start with just the portable stuff for light trucks. I don't know why you would do a dual battery anymore, unless you have really, really high, you know, energy requirements. The technology is just getting so good, and the fridges are getting, you know, very efficient. I mean, some of the fridges that are coming out even have lithium batteries in them.
Yeah, so it kind of takes care of your dual battery system all in one unit.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that it also reduces the complexity in the vehicle.
Yep. And then when you remove the fridge to go back to daily driver duties, you're also removing all of that weight and complexity from
yeah,
it.
You know,
from it too.
So particularly, yeah. I think for like the North American overlander, maybe you're not going international, you're going out camping on the weekends. I have no idea why people do these really complicated built-in, you know, dual batteries or dual battery systems that are using lithium. I think the portable stuff is just so, it just works.
And I think that's actually what people are usually doing now.
Yeah.
So like even the Scout camper that I had a Goal Zero lithium dual battery system or battery system in it, but it also had a module that you could plug into it that allowed it to charge at 50 amps off of the vehicle.
Oh, that's
so it is like a dual battery system.
Yeah.
The only difference is that it's difficult to, like, if your starting battery goes down, it's difficult to get that much power going the other direction.
Yeah.
There are some of them that have Anderson connections, so you could devise a jumper cable system. So just make sure you know that going into it, because that's one of the advantages of a dual battery system is when you go into combining mode, you can actually, if your starting battery has failed and your house batteries are full, you can jump start your vehicle from your own dual battery system. Mm. So just making sure that you have the ability to go the other direction or bring along a jumper pack with you, which is obviously a really simple
choice. Yeah, the jumper packs are really, really cool.
But the whole thing is like super lightweight.
Yeah.
Even between the two of them.
You know, to jump over to like, I'm going to say like the van side, the trailer side, or like the expedition vehicle side, the things that lithium now allows you to do, like we did a lithium conversion on the Earth Roamer. And when I say conversion, I mean we just put some lithium batteries in it.
Yeah. You know, removed all these AGMs and put in the lithium.
It saved 500 pounds. Yeah. So we had 4 8D batteries previously. We replaced them with, I forgot the name of the company. Anyway, they were, you know, more of a US based company.
There's some good ones. There's Battleborn now.
Yeah, there's Battleborn.
Red Arc finally has, you know, lithium batteries now. They're awesome.
You know, basically what I looked for is I looked for accountability, because a lot of these companies are just rebranding Alibaba batteries. Like you can tell because they're all basically the same size and they all have like the same font. Like they don't even go through the, you know, the effort of changing the font.
Right.
You know, Mastervolt is, I think, who did ours. But anyways, So saved a huge amount of weight. So my earth roamer is now
Did you also increase the amount of amp hours?
Yeah, we went from 1,020 AGM, which is, you basically calculated at about a 50% effective use rate.
Yeah, depth of draw.
Yep. Yeah. Lithium, you can take them all the way down. And also, they just don't drop as much. So when we turn on the air conditioning or we turn on the, you know, anything particularly that's using the inverter, we're converting from 13.2, 13.4 volts rather than converting from 12.2. So, you know, voltage, amperage, all that stuff.
It
It just actually works more efficiently.
The floats are higher.
I mean, we can run, and they recharge so much faster.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really realize how long it takes the AGM stuff to recharge.
Yeah, that Explorer X145 trailer that I've mentioned before, it's like my favorite overland trailer, but it's got 1,080 amp hours of lithium and 1,000 watts of solar.
Yeah.
It has the 12-volt Dometic air conditioner. And I have never even thought about...
You just don't have to think about it
anymore. I mean, it has an induction stovetop. Like, you just do all the things.
Yeah.
And you don't... I mean, it does... The one challenge around electric that hasn't been solved yet is heating. So, like, if you need to heat the space...
Mm. Yeah.
Those normally are done. Yours is probably done with a diesel S-bar style. In the X145, it uses like a combo water heater,
air Truma heater type things.
The Truma one, which is, they're very, very good. But you just got to have enough energy volume to heat, and that usually comes down to propane or diesel.
Yeah.
So I've not seen a good air heater yet that's electric.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll come out, but.
Yeah. You know, you can do like the heat pump things. I mean, we're geeking out on that in the house. We actually made our house like all run on lithium with these,
which is so fun.
Tesla power walls. But I just think it's a huge thing because
don't you have like 8.6 gigawatts on your roof?
Something like that.
Watts? I mean, it's kilowatts. Yours is actually so much it's in kilowatts now.
But lithium has just for us. Like, I actually now take that to the earth roamer to the racetrack when it's warm because I don't have to run a generator. I have like 24/7 air conditioning if I want it. We've been able to expand where and when we camp. Living in Arizona, it's just a reality. Like,
even on really nice days, the afternoons can get hot in a camper, and it's just nice to have, like in that X145, I can run the AC for like a couple hours in the afternoon when it gets bacon hot in the trailer. And then it's nice and cool for when you go to sleep.
Yeah.
But it's just not an issue.
And then we can run Starlink. We have the big high performance Starlink dish, which is great going down the road and everything, but we just leave it on now. Where before I had to be more judicious with when it was on and off.
Sure.
You know, which actually did have some benefits because now I just am constantly connected and I don't get that disconnection.
Yeah, sure.
With camping.
There's a yin and the yang to everything, right?
You just don't have to worry about it. And the pricing on lithium, like...
It's come down a lot.
Like, I remember when it kind of really first became an option. And obviously, like, I own an import company in the Overland space. But, you know, I was looking and these batteries were like $1,500 for like the... Changshin Alibaba batteries. Now they're like $150 on Amazon.
Yeah, when we did a huge battery test about 6 years ago in Overland Journal, and we had like a really high quality lithium battery, and it was $3,000.
Yeah,
and it would have been the equivalent of like a Group 24.
Yeah.
So I mean, it did have.
I remember that one.
Yeah, I mean these batteries were incredibly expensive. And now you can get them in all the sizes. They are very reliable on their charging. You know, there was always issues of like, if you flatten the battery, it was hard to get them to restart charging again. But now they've got that all sorted out in their charge controllers, internal charge controllers.
And I've never heard of anybody having problems with like fire or anything like.
Yeah. It just,
you know,
it's not any more likely. I mean, internal combustion cars burn down too.
Yeah.
You know, it's just. You know, if an EV burns down, it's just a lot more, it's a bit more dramatic, but they really don't burn up that often. Like it's, everything's a little bit again, over dramatized, right? So, all right. So then number eight on our list is all these travel Facebook groups and forums. It's one of the downsides of Instagram is that you lose a little bit of that back and forth discussion around more technical subjects. And that's still where internet forums and Facebook groups shine. Facebook groups are a little bit more challenging around kind of searching topics.
Yeah.
But like even Expedition Portal, there's still so many active trip threads and discussion threads because it's really easy to review those in an archive, find them within the forum. But for example, I found the fixer that I needed to find for Ethiopia to get the Grenadier into Ethiopia. I found it through a Facebook group, the Africa Overland Facebook group, and everybody was great. You still deal with a lot of the, like this guy did Africa 20 years ago and he's still super angry at everybody who's doing it now, you know, yeah. Where like, you're like back in my day, there's a lot of that still. But for
there's
the most part,
angry people on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. I don't understand why the internet makes people so angry, but, or I guess they just, you know, they want to signal whatever they got to, yeah, validation. Yeah. But, those Facebook groups are really powerful tools because once the travelers know, like, oh, everybody's on this group, then all of the active travelers are kind of engaging in that way.
Yeah.
And then you can connect with them through a direct message. And then usually that translates then into you've got someone's WhatsApp number. And then really all of the active communications with other active travelers happen in WhatsApp groups. And there are some East Africa WhatsApp groups as well where it's just a whole bunch of people that are actively traveling that are all communicating together through a WhatsApp group, which of course is still made meta as well, yeah. But it works really, really well. And it allows for this active update of these are the issues that we're encountering. This was successful as of last week. And I think it gives travelers a lot of confidence. A lot of this stuff that we're talking about today is either about removing the friction of travel or reducing the anxiety of travel or making it that much more accessible because you don't have to be, Robert Young Pelton to go travel these places where, you know, you have someone with an incredible amount of travel experience, but now it's just so much more accessible to the average person.
Yeah. And I think you can just plan more. Like we're planning a Pan American highway trip and we're on like the Pan Am traveler group.
Perfect.
Well, but now I'm like able to like, you know, someone say, oh, we had a great experience in the campsite here. Okay, cool. Well, I take that and I put it on my Google My Map.
That's right.
You know, you see stuff of, oh, there's a roadblock here or there's protests here or whatever. Like before you would just roll up on that.
That's right.
And now you kind of, you just have more information. And again, I think it's that, where that reducing the anxiety, just making it more approachable.
Yeah. You're just removing so many friction points or anxiety points for people. And so that's why we see so many more people traveling. A lot of that has really enabled travel, which I think is a positive thing. We can all hearken back to the days, when Tom Shepard crossed the Sahara using a sun compass. And I certainly think that that is as cool as it gets.
Yeah.
But it really limits it to people with his level of skill.
Yeah.
So whereas today, a retired couple can have never traveled before. They can hop in their whatever, their Wrangler, and off they go.
Yep.
Yeah. So it makes a huge difference. So check out the Facebook groups and the forums. Obviously, Expedition Portal is something that we manage, and there's a lot of active discussions around adventures on that as well. So number seven on our list is another one that you suggested.
Yeah, kind of these small, affordable campers. The Go Fast campers, the AT campers, we'll just call them like the wedge-style campers. They offer...
Or even like a scout.
Or a scout camper.
These are simple...
It used to be that, you had to spend big bucks to get some comfort.
Mm-hmm.
There really wasn't much between a roof tent and an expedition truck or roof tent, truck camper, expedition truck. Now, if you're on a budget, like you can find a GoFast on Facebook Marketplace for like $5,000 or $6,000.
Which is not that much more than a hard shell
roof tent. No, you figure a hard shell roof tent and then you figure... you know, you have to have a way to mount it, whether that's on your roof or you're doing a bed rack with a pickup truck or something. But then you also gain some privacy, you know, just the ability to, the ability to stand up and change is huge.
Yep.
You know, you're in these campgrounds and oftentimes, like say you're doing the Pan Am or you're just traveling. It's not like, you know, the North American overlanding thing where you're in this vast, you know, expanse of emptiness and there's nobody around and you could run around naked if you wanted.
Right.
You know, there's going to be somebody like 3 feet from you. So the ability to have a little bit of privacy.
Or bad weather.
Yeah. Just everything.
Or you're sick that day.
Yeah.
It just really helps.
Yeah. And it also opens up the types of vehicles that you can take on these trips. Generally speaking, the larger the vehicle that you take, the more compromise you're going to make. Like as we plan this Pan Am trip and, you know, you and I are talking about it. Oh, cool. Nice little colonial village. I don't fit.
Yeah. You're not even going to get near it in the earth roamer.
Yeah. It's just not going to go there. Whether, like I said, it's the power lines or whatever, where, you know, if you had a, you know, like the new Tacoma,
yeah,
which is the Tacoma's finally good again, which is great. But a mid-sized truck you can have with one of these be completely within the payload of the vehicle. So you're not worried about, you know, being on a Laguna's route and cracking your frame or something.
Yep.
I think they're just really, really cool. And it allows you to just keep it simple. Oftentimes these things weigh somewhere between 250 and 400 pounds.
Yep. So they can fit within the payload of like a mid-sized truck. And one of the realities too is that the mid-sized truck configuration that so many manufacturers are only selling now is the four-door short bed.
Yeah.
So like if you want to get the new ZR2 Bison AEV, you can only get it in the four-door with a five-foot bed.
Yeah.
So the GoFast camper or the AT camper, those allow you to have a genuine sleeping camping situation because it hangs over the cab.
Yeah.
So you really do end up with an incredibly capable, comfortable vehicle. And they're like, if you were to look at, you know, like a Nissan Frontier of 4 years ago and a used GoFast camper for less than 25 grand or close to it, you're off to the races.
And honestly, like there's people that do it for less. I mean, you see, you know, you don't have to have this to travel, but just the combination of these small campers with, you know, affordable trucks that you don't have to put a lot of money into maintenance and they're new and reliable and they get decent fuel economy.
And they're super capable. A lot of them have rear lockers.
Yeah.
And that also includes like the Ursa Minor stuff. I mean, I think John Gish has done such a great job. I mean, like there was a part of me that always wanted to do a big trip in the Honda Element with the e-camper on the top of it. And there were people
who have a cult following.
Yeah. And there were several people who drove them the length of the Pan American, which I think is just like, so it's so awesome.
Yeah. Cause you don't really need, like it's a Honda.
Yeah.
Like it's just going to work.
It will. You and know, it's a little box.
Yeah. And then, you know, Ursa Minor has the Wrangler campers like Dan Greck used on his Africa trip. And I still think like one, I just like Wranglers.
Yeah.
They're easy to drive. They're built for technical terrain just through the form factor of the body.
They're also kind of fun. Like when people encounter Jeeps in other countries, they tend to smile a lot because
they're just fun cars.
People know Jeeps are fun. Yeah. And I mean, I know Dan has an affinity for Jeep, but like, if someone with the travel chops of Dan Greck is like, I'm going to build a Wrangler and I'm going to put an Ursa Minor on the top of it. Now, he did mention that, you know, really bad weather, or really high wind, there were some limitations, but for the most part, like that's what that guy picked.
Yeah. So. I think they're really cool. And, you know, I guess moving a little bit away from like the small affordable stuff, you know, you have like, maybe I'll put the Scout in that. You have like the Scout for a little bit more money. You have like the AT Aterra.
Yep.
And you have kind of some of these smaller campers that offer, maybe that's where you're going to get some 12 volt AC. And you're going to have, you know, a door that closes.
Yep.
You know, but you can get a Scout. I mean, what are Scout campers?
They can be expensive if you get like into a Kenai, but if you're going to go, I think they have one that's called the Tuck or something. I can't remember the name exactly, but it goes in the back of like a Gladiator and that thing's 20 grand, you know, and It's got a bed and a couch and a fridge.
Yeah,
and
so think about that.
A heater.
So, so call it like 20 or 30 grand, whether you're going with the mid-size, the full-size, or whatever. Yeah. You can have a door to shut on the world.
Yes.
When, you know, the dogs won't stop barking in the campground that you're in or whatever.
Yeah, the Scout on the GMC, for me, I think has been my favorite.
You used overall, that the most.
I did. And I lived out of it for months. And like there were, in almost every case, I had no desire to go to a hotel because I already had my little house with me.
Yeah.
And I think integrating a 12-volt AC in there with a little bit more battery power would have been probably the only thing I would have changed for long term. Yeah. Because, you know, I do like the desert. And there's times when you need a little bit of air conditioning, a little bit of comfort just to sleep well.
There's a travel couple, Mortels on the Move.
That's right.
You can follow them on Instagram. I think they're actually even doing like Scout Camper sales and outfitting now. I think they actually put a Tesla battery in theirs.
They did. And they ended up putting AC. Air conditioning. Yeah, that's right.
We ran into them on our way to the Arctic, you know, 2 years ago. And they drove, you know, I think they did most of the Pan Am in Central America. And like to have AC in a Scout, I mean... You know, like, yeah, this stuff isn't cheap, but the point being that you no longer have to buy an Earth Cruiser or an Earth Roamer or a Unicat to get some of those.
Yeah, you're still dealing with composite, and plus a Scout Camper, especially like the ones that would go in the back of a Tacoma or in the back of a Jeep Gladiator or whatever, they're really lightweight. They're like 700-800 pounds.
And when you're done, you can sell them.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and they're really desirable.
That's the thing, is what's your roof tent going to be worth after you slept in it for a year?
Yeah.
And it smells like a hockey locker room.
It's true. You speak the truth, man. You speak the truth. Yeah, so I think these little campers like that, especially like the Go Fast, the AT stuff, those are really, really useful. Or even, for example, you know, putting an Alucab on top of a Grenadier
Kaya campers are really cool, actually. Yeah. We had one of those in Africa for a little bit and loved it.
Yeah.
Like super durable, simple.
Really well made. They tend to be a little bit heavier, but they're meant to survive long-term travel.
Yeah, they use them as rental vehicles in Africa.
So they really do hold up.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are really clever. And the fact that you can bolt one to the top of a Grenadier or put it on the top of your old school Defender, it's like a very cool solution, I think.
Yeah.
And doesn't really change the footprint. You can still put the car in a container, which I think is a factor.
Yeah.
And that's the same with these other campers outside of the Scout. They're all low profile.
Yeah.
All right. So number six on our list, we have vans, which you and I kind of came to that same conclusion at about the same time because we have the first electric Sprinter.
Yeah, sitting
right in the
you can't even tell that
in
it's
the
electric.
Southwest. Yeah. You wouldn't know it. In fact, the Mercedes badge on the front, the emblem on the front, is what you open to plug in
the charging,
and it drives great. It drives. It's faster than the diesel version for sure, and the weight is so low. It just feels really, really production ready. I think people are going to start, especially those that maybe like in your configuration where you can charge it at your house, you want to go do little day trips or whatever, or you you like to go, you know, rock hounding or whatever, your dogs out, it's perfect.
The electric, you know, and we're not really this is a tangent, I get it, but the idea of an electric RV makes a lot more sense than I believe people think. Because they're oftentimes only transiting. They're transiting on highways, or they're transiting from campground to campground, and you have 50 amp service that most of these they're already wired for it
for EVs.
Like, yes, they require a lot of energy, but not as much as you'd think. Like my electric hot water heater uses as much energy on a daily basis as I do in my Tesla, like kilowatt for kilowatt.
Yeah.
I use about 16 kilowatts a day for both.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'll be interesting to see as the infrastructure grows for these vehicles. When you're leaving it at a campground, maybe they only have 15 amp service. You can just plug it in. And if it takes a day to charge or 2 days to charge, okay. But then you're cutting your number one cost. as a traveler.
That's right.
But just the form factor of the van is, I think, what we're talking about. And, you know, I think with the introduction of the four-wheel drive Sprinter and then the all-wheel drive Transit and the huge aftermarket that's around them, you know, we're not necessarily talking about the guys that put trophy truck lights on the top of their Sprinter van that can do 15 mile an hour off-road when Le Mans endurance racers have two headlights. Your ability for DIY is just huge.
Yeah.
And I think
it's a blank canvas. Like even this one that's parked just right outside, it is a blank canvas to build out.
As a footprint of a vehicle goes, the van is obviously meant to transport goods, you know, it's for a service business. You know, you don't have a separation between the cab and what ends up being your living quarters.
Sure.
And, you know, now you can get insulation panels, you can get drop-in, you know, sinks, you can get water tanks, and it's all kind of optimized, and you can do it in a way that I think bang for the buck for comfort, fuel economy, reliability, serviceability, like that particularly the Sprinter is just...
And they're available in all those countries. So, like, if you're in Argentina, they sell Sprinter vans.
Yeah.
You're going to go into the Mercedes dealership, and they're going to be able to work on your vehicle. They, most of the deliveries, most of the commercial servicing in Europe happens in a Sprinter van or something similar.
Yeah.
Something similar sized. So, someone seeing you driving it around or parked on the side of the road or whatever, it doesn't look...
It's a white Sprinter van.
It doesn't look out of place at all. You also... Depending on the configuration, you can rotate your seats around and you're now in the living space. They're very space efficient. They're easy to drive too. Like a Sprinter van, like even this EV one is just, it's like one hand on the wheel. You know, if you're driving an LMTV with a camper on the back of it, like you are paying attention.
Yeah.
With the Sprinters, it's just like, it's like driving a car. They're very easy for people to drive.
Yeah, and they're not really that big.
Yeah.
You know, like the, I think it's
this one's big. This one's a 172.
It's the 172.
Yeah. 144.
144, yeah. Yeah.
Like the perfect.
Yeah. I mean, it fits in every parking spot.
Yeah.
You know, they're a little bit tall. I always encourage people, don't put a roof rack on the top.
Yeah.
Don't put a bunch of heavy boxes on the top. Like, you know.
Take less stuff.
Right. But, you know, putting a bunch of weight, putting hundreds of pounds on top of a 9-foot lever is going to make it handle like.
Yeah. Crap. And then it just is that much more restrictive on taking it on trails because most trails are not driven with vehicles that tall.
Yeah.
So just keeping the roof really, really simple, I think, is a good thing. And like on a 172, like this van, like there is a ton of room inside there.
Yeah.
Like you can have a full bathroom. You don't have to swap between a bed and a dinette. There's plenty of room in that thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, when we talk about the vans being a game changer, it's not so much that I'm advocating for a van or that I would necessarily even use one, but they have absolutely been a game changer. They are everywhere.
Yeah.
Like the number of Sprinter van, overland Sprinter van conversions that are happening from Field Van and everybody else. I mean, these are amazing build outs. They're fairly capable off road. I mean, they're not like a Wrangler, of course, but like you can do most remote roads with those vehicles.
I know that all kind of mass production RVs have their little quibbles and nibbles and issues, but like the Winnebago Revel,
yeah,
you know, they're now finally like during pandemic they were selling for over sticker and you couldn't get one. I mean, now, like, almost any dealer, RV dealer in America has one.
That's right. They're just sitting there ready to go.
You know.
And they have the new Echo, which is more like an RV on the back of a Sprinter. So,
yeah.
Even more space on the inside, depending on what you need.
Yeah. But you can, you know, if you're just staying in North America and Canada, I think the cool thing is, you know, while we live in this world of finance, so you can get a 20 or 30 year RV loan on these things.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, if you know that you're just going to do it for a year, think of all the comfort and warranty that you get and how predictable your expenses could be for that year, 2 year trip. But then it's a commodity afterwards.
That's right.
You just, I mean, if you don't care, just take it back to the dealer and they sell it for you.
That's right. And yeah. You also get back all of that time that you would have spent building it out.
Yeah.
You get all that time back because they really are turnkey.
Yeah.
So just being a little bit more open to, and like if you work with a company like Field Van, they're going to be able to customize it to your needs.
They're higher quality for sure.
And they've been around a long time, so they really know what you might need. And they travel a lot in those vans too, like Alan and Johnny. Those guys really travel a lot in these things, so they know what works and what doesn't work, which I think is helpful. Yeah. All right, so number five on our list is going to be smartphones and the apps that you put on them. Matt mentioned Google Fi, which I think is a good addition.
Yeah, it's like $20-something a month in your phone.
It just works everywhere in the world.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't think it works in North Korea.
Yeah.
Probably not. But the entirety of the Pan-American Highway, if that's your trip, it works. I've used it all over Africa.
Yeah.
It's a game changer. Anyways.
It is a game changer.
Just the smartphone. Like, it's almost hard to imagine doing these trips without them.
Hailing an Uber, opening up iOverlander, opening up Gaia, opening up Onyx. It's just all right there.
Yeah. I mean, I literally can't imagine a world without Google Maps.
Sure.
I mean, I had my first iPhone when I was in high school.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
I had a phone that had a separate, receiving transmitting box in the trunk of my Honda Accord. And then it had the little handset with the curly wire. That was my first cell phone. So we're about a generation off, just about almost a generation off. So,
but the amount of things, the amount of information that is just at your fingertips as a traveler with a smartphone these days and all of the apps that are out there is just, I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah. And you can go onto Google, find out some information. You can go onto these communities on Facebook and ask for help and questions, you know, that you basically have the Encyclopedia Britannica and a supercomputer and a flashlight. And
you can apply for your e-visa.
Yeah, that's right.
You can find out if there's a protest or this or that.
Yeah. Several of my e-visas were actually just in my wallet on my iPhone, you know, like where you have all your credit cards
like
your
plane tickets.
You just clicked on it and you opened it up and they scanned it at the border. So it's the smartphones are ubiquitous. And now a lot of the driver's licenses are becoming available on your phone. So the smartphone really is a game changer for travelers.
Stuff too. That's right. Like if you get pickpocketed,
that's right.
Like, you know,
I've forgotten my wallet sometimes.
Do people steal phones anymore? Because, I mean, they pretty much brick themselves.
Yeah, that's a good question. I was told a couple times in Nairobi to be careful having my iPhone out, which seems weird because you're right. Like, you can just brick the thing.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't know. If the FBI can't get into it with that one terrorist, dude, I don't know if
pickpocketer. And the nice thing is if you're up to date on all your iCloud and everything else like that, you just go get a new phone and you're off to the races. And when I travel, I always carry a burner phone. I don't actually keep my iPhone out in my hand. I use just a standard Samsung on a local SIM card. So I try to do all of those things that way. If it is stolen, I've not lost my primary kind of communicator.
Yeah, I don't do that anymore. I mean, you know, I have Verizon on my iPhone here and it's $10 a day.
Yeah.
And for the amount of time that I am overseas, it's a worthwhile trade-off for that price. I previously had Google Fi, which I actually really enjoyed. I think, you know, not to go back to Google Fi, but as a traveler, it's just not having to go and spend the time on
Can
the
you
SIM
get
card.
Google Fi on your on an iPhone?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's not. It's like they call it in beta, but it totally works. You just have to change some settings.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I just don't get service at my house. I only get Verizon service, so it's just, you know, a reality of modern life.
Well, and the reason why I have a burner phone all the time is just it talks to the evidence of the fact that this is a game changer. Because like me without a smartphone when I'm traveling is very, very difficult.
Yeah.
So like when I was, you know, detained at the Djiboutian border for 3 days, I had no data.
Yeah.
I was only allowed to make phone because in Djibouti, they do not give you data with your plan. So you can make phone calls and you can send SMSs. And it felt like I'd gone back to the Stone Age, like trying to solve problems by only being able to make phone calls, as opposed to just sending emails and checking this and researching that. We couldn't do any of that. So it was a real lesson in the fact that smartphones are such a game changer.
Definitely.
So, all right. So now we've got number four on our list.
Yeah. iOverlander.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's so good. And it's a not-for-profit. And it's like, they're just the coolest people.
Yeah, like there's definitely been companies that have come along that have tried to kind of profitize that model. I'm glad that iOverlander
is just crushing it.
It's such a community resource.
Yep.
You know, it does have some issues. You know, they've gotten a lot better, I think, at moderating things. You know, some of the data can be a little bit old. You know, some of it can be, you know, they're doing a better job of marking like this place is permanently closed or whatever. But it's just by far. Again, I go back to planning this Pan Am trip, and I have to be very, very careful. We're going to take the Earth Roamer, and some campsites I can't get into. So, like, if you're traveling even to the level of an obscure vehicle, the community will say it's big rig friendly.
Yep.
Or and I know that not.
Or that it has cell coverage at the campsite,
or they have laundry,
or Wi-Fi, or whatever, and they'll even make people do a good job of making comments, and they do actively moderate it. So this is actually something that I love about iOverlander. I put in a coffee shop somewhere, I think in Malawi or something like that. Like, I was so excited to have found a coffee shop, and I didn't do like a very good job of like a lot of detail, because I'm like, it's a coffee shop in this place. And they came in and just like deleted my entry. and I loved it. I loved it. It just like, I mean, they knew, they also like reached out to let me know that they did that, because they do know who we are and Overland Journal and everything. They're like, hey, it just didn't meet our guidelines. And I was like, thank you for doing that.
Thank you
for not like, just because it's Overland Journal, like that my sucky contribution got to stay around. But he's like, no, it's like, it didn't. If you go back and you change this and you do that, then it can stay. And I was like, that is awesome that they kept those standards. So those that are listening that use iOverlander, please remember that iOverlander is a not-for-profit, and they do not charge you for any of the services that you're getting access to. So the only way that we keep iOverlander around is to donate. So if you've gone on a trip
every year
and you've had a good experience with iOverlander and it's made your trip better, it's facilitated things, or it's reduced your anxiety, we have a responsibility, especially with a not-for-profit, to give back.
Yep.
So give back what you're able to. You know, if you're driving around in a man truck with a $1 million vehicle, give more. You know, if you're driving around and it's like, it's the trip of a lifetime and you scrimped every penny, they're going to respect the fact that maybe you only give them $5.
Yeah.
But like, do give back, and also give back by providing information, updating information if it's wrong. Sometimes people's location is off when they do the entry. So I've had to make some corrections to locations. So I'm actively updating information as I'm traveling. But iOverlander is an incredible tool, and it's an organization that I just really respect.
I have no idea how I would plan this Pan Am trip without it.
It would be hard.
Genuinely.
I mean, you would, and people did, but it was just that much harder.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's not that difficult.
It's actually kind of cool now, you know, for the international stuff, you're getting the campgrounds and people that are able to start businesses because of iOverlander.
That's right.
Because it, like, the listing carries that much kind of clout.
It really does. And here's another example. iOverlander is an offline tool. So it you don't get to play around on the map so much, because that requires a data connection. But all of the information on the database is all local on your phone. So again, when I was stuck in that Djibouti border, I was able to open up iOverlander. It had the WhatsApp number of this French foreign legionnaire that had a campsite nearby the border. And I was able to reach out to him saying we were going to come, but then we got stuck at the border and he reached back out on WhatsApp. So it was, reached back out on SMS.
Yeah.
So we were able to stay in communication, and he actually came to the border with food. And I mean, it brought me to tears actually, but it was incredible. And that's because iOverlander is an offline tool. So if you lose data connection, you still can find resources around you from the database.
So
iOverlander is really, really good.
Make a donation.
Yeah, make a donation for sure. All right. So now we've got number three on the list, which is the Garmin inReach. There are other tools like a Garmin inReach, but it's the best. Yeah. And there's really just no reason to like mince words around it. There are other tools that work. The reason why Garmin is the best is that their units are very, very small. They're incredibly reliable. Like their newest messenger looks like a little a battery charger. So like when it's in your stuff and you're getting checked at a border, they would never know that it was anything but like a little charging brick.
Did you hear that Bruce got detained?
Oh, yeah. Well, he had it on his vest, like on his vest.
I mean, like here's the thing like there are the people that use Garmin iReach and they're like, you know, I mean, everybody has their own perspective, but like you see them in Sedona and they're on a trail where there's like
8 million people.
There's 8 million people.
And you have 5G.
And you're next to the 5-star hotel Enchantment and they have this big Garmin inReach. Like you don't just have it with you. Right.
Exactly.
Like if you're at the visitor center for the Grand Canyon, you don't need it.
It is good to have it on your person.
There are countries that you just can't have them in.
Like
India.
No go.
Yeah, don't go to the Kashmir region with one of those.
Well, and I mean, even Joe Fleming, you know, from Bonafide, he got his confiscated in India. Bruce got his confiscated. There definitely are places.
I mean, they're going to do what they're going to do, but like, I also don't understand that. Meanwhile, you have an iPhone that has a satellite texting now.
Yeah, but it doesn't work everywhere, unfortunately. It only works in North America right now. It's going to be coming online in Australia soon, but the SOS feature, it's also very limited. It's only emergency. Whereas an inReach, you can say, hey, I need fuel, or can you bring out a spare tire? So that way you're not having to call in the cavalry.
Yeah, and you can have those like predetermined messages. Like we have the one that has the screen so I can actually text. Yep. But previously when I had them, like I had you in there and I had my dad in there. Yep. And I'm like, you know, if my dad can't figure it out, you can figure it out.
Yep, that's right.
And you could have those things. I think it's also for the people at home too.
I think that's where it really makes a huge difference is it gives, again, confidence to travel.
Yeah.
So for the traveler, they have the confidence that if something goes wrong, they can get help. And it also gives the family members that are left behind the confidence to be able to track you, see that you're moving, that you're okay. You can send them little daily updates of how your trip is going. And it just makes everybody so much happier. And it's $50 a month on the like Explorer plan.
Yeah, the crazy one.
And that's it's unlimited texting by satellite.
Yeah.
And it uses the Iridium network, which is the most reliable network with full global coverage, including, I mean, I have sent, inReach messages from the northern tip of Greenland, and I have sent inReach messages from the entire, you know, crossing of the continent of Antarctica with no issues. Like it works every day, always works.
Yeah.
So the Garmin inReach, I think, is one of the most powerful tools, again, for giving confidence to travelers to go.
Yeah, it makes it almost, if you're going properly remote,
yep.
You just kind of have to have one.
Yeah. And, you know, they have some that integrate with the GPS units now and like the little one, the messenger that I use, it doesn't even have an antenna. It's this little black box and you can actually charge your iPhone from it too.
Oh,
it has two-way charging. So like it just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, it's really cool.
You know, really a useful tool. All right. So now we're down to number two on the list, which I
love my Starlink, man.
No, it's like, just it is a game changer to use like, that term yet again.
I want to start with some of the negatives. You have to be judicious with how you use Starlink because I think, you know, let's say for the North American overlanding where you're doing remote camping, you want to get away.
Yeah.
That's part of the experience to me. So you have to, you know, I have mine on a switch, and sometimes I just turn it off. Like I'll notice, I've said this before, but I notice, you know, we'll be at some beautiful campsite in Utah and there's nothing around and we're trying to get away and the Starlink goes on and me and my wife stop talking.
Yeah.
Because.
And then you're on Instagram looking at other people's trips while you're on this amazing trip.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So, so Starlink is a wonderful thing. But you do have to, be disciplined to be able to turn it off sometimes.
Yep.
But it has enabled so many people, like we talk about, you know, the vans and the van life, like it has enabled so many people to get out and explore and to live a, an exceptionally cool life where before
they could work remotely.
They would be stuck, you know, in Illinois. Like
I that was me in the scout again. Like I work 4 or 5 hours a day.
Yeah.
Right in my camper in a beautiful, you know, campsite.
And it's transparent now. It's so fast.
Yeah. Nobody knows that you're on it.
Like I can, I can take a call in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, for our business, and you have no idea where I am.
No idea. And what I would do, you know, like how people on a Zoom call, they'll change the background to be like some waterfall or whatever.
Yeah.
Like I had the waterfall in the background. So I would actually change it to like an office scene just to not be that guy of like, it. Oh yeah. Hey, I'm like, I'm at 9,000 feet with a view out into Moab or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe a social note. The view from my office today posts are really, really annoying to everybody but you, even if it's something that you regularly do.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
No, it's true. Yeah, like don't be that guy.
Yeah.
We manage the signaling. So Starlink is incredible. It's affordable. It gives you the ability.
It just keeps getting better.
And even while you're driving, so your navigator can be researching things or looking up a place to go or a hiking trail or whatever. Yeah. And it is very seamless. There are countries where you can't bring them in, so make sure that you know what the local laws are. I did the unique componentry modification on mine, so it would mount on magnets flat on the top of the Grenadier, but I was able to use it in most of Southern Africa.
Yeah.
But I couldn't bring it into Ethiopia, so I took it home before I did that.
They can use some power if you don't do the 12-volt.
The 12-volt conversion
Tesla,
was a big deal.
Tesla, though, as a company, has a pretty good track record of listening to how people actually use their products. I want to say it's now the V3 is completely flat. It's a lot easier to mount.
Right.
As I said, I have the high performance dish, which is big, but that's the one that's like fully supported, you know,
for motion
use, which works for us. There was no compromise. We had so much space.
I'm shocked at my Starlink, I set it on the bow of the sailboat, and even in like when the sailboat's rocking or whatever, it just works.
Yeah.
It totally works. It's incredible.
You were saying that with the unique componentry conversion, it's like 2 amps?
Yeah, about 2 amps. So it's just a little less than half of the draw because you're not, so in your vehicle, you're going from 12 volts up to 120.
Yeah.
And then you're going from 120 back down to 12 volts inside. So there's all this parasitic loss in the two different conversions.
Yeah.
And then you just don't have a lot of heat waste and everything. It just goes right to 12 volts.
Yeah.
So
ours ends up, I would say on average, it's about 8 to 10.
You've got the higher performance units.
It's more significant, and we're running it on 110 and we're using the Starlink router.
Yeah.
I don't know if that has any advantages, you know.
The unique componentry just puts all of it into the unit.
It's really cool. It's
works great. I'm super pleased with it.
I also think that this technology, you know, Amazon is actively releasing their competitor. You know, they're launching their satellites and everything. I think it's what's going to be cool are that these satellite terminals are going to get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Until they're in a cell phone.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Amazon has kind of targeted, you know, a hand portable unit. I want to say they even said it's going to be rechargeable.
Yep.
And, you know, that.
And Starlink is working with T-Mobile to make it available in a cell phone.
Yeah.
So these are really, really big movers around travel. I mean, imagine being able to walk around with the power of Starlink on your hike, you know, if you need to get help.
I've even noticed how it has affected where people camp.
Mm.
Again, you know, I could keep going back to the pandemic, but it was just so many people went out in the woods, so to speak.
Yeah.
They went out into the woods near the cell tower.
Right.
So you started to see on iOverlander, oh, well, this had LTE or this had 5G or whatever.
Right.
And now people are actually more spread out. They don't have to be.
It's better.
Like there's a spot in Wickenburg that I can think of that was just basically a shanty town because there was a cell tower there. And now you drive through it same time of year, and there's
less.
Like nobody there
because
they
less.
Can just be elsewhere.
Yeah, it just enables so much. Starlink is it's really powerful for those that can work a couple of days a week remotely, or maybe they can work full-time remotely, or for a couple months they could make that transition. It just allows us to travel and work. Yeah. Which, of course, the most optimal is just to go travel and leave all that behind and don't even bring a cell phone. But
yeah.
That's not the reality for most people.
Yeah, I mean, so. The only way that you could do that, you know, the only way that you could not be in a way independently wealthy or be entirely drawn from your savings before,
yeah.
Now you can have a job.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you and I think it's important for a lot of people. Gives them that, again, that confidence to go
and
travel.
It just allows more people to do it.
That's right.
You know,
and if you are traveling and you want to call your kids and wish them good night, you know, you're doing it on a video call now. You're seeing their face. They're seeing your face. You get to show them where you're camped out. And it just allows people to remain connected in ways that we weren't able to do before.
Definitely.
So, yeah, Starlink is a really powerful tool. All right, so now we're down to number one of the most significant game changers in overlanding. So
factory.
You came up with this one, and I think you're right.
It's huge.
I think you're right.
It's factory overland vehicles.
Yeah.
You know, I really think that GM is leading the charge with this, as is INEOS. You know, AEV being kind of a quasi-manufacturer. I mean, now they're working with GM
and, that's right.
On a lot of vehicles. But, you know, it used to be that, you know, you had a very small pool of vehicles. You know, it used to be like the 80 series and the 100 series. You know, then you started.
And there was the quirky guy who would do it in Discovery or whatever, like me. But
But you had to spend a lot of money to convert these vehicles to make them appropriate.
Yeah.
I remember my first Discovery. I remember spending my my high school graduation money that, you know, like your family gives you some money or not my parents, but, you know, you have a party or whatever, on an old man Emu lift from John Lee at Expedition Exchange and 235, 85, 16 tires. And I was like, I was the man. Like I had nearly 32 inch tires and I couldn't imagine anything else that I would need.
Yeah.
Now I can buy a Jeep Wrangler around 35.
That's so
I
right.
Can buy
from the factory.
I can buy a mid-size pickup truck with, you know, Jounce dampeners, with
multi-matics, 35 inch tire,
35 inch
front and rear lockers.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And to GM's credit, they didn't try to reinvent the wheel. They said, who is the most effective partner in making a factory, the best factory overland vehicle? They contacted AEV, who knows how to build the best overland vehicles.
Totally.
And then you end up with something that works so well and is really desirable. Like it looks good. It functions well. And it has a warranty and it's all rolled up into your payment.
I mean, and here's the thing too. I've said this before, but I've made the mistake of not doing these kind of factory trucks. And granted, sometimes building something is just fun.
Yeah, I'm over it.
But it's $175 an hour now if you're not doing all of the work yourself. And the parts are really expensive.
Yep.
And then you're paying for the tires twice. And you're paying for the bumpers twice.
That's right.
And you're paying for the suspension twice because you're just throwing that stuff away.
That's right.
It has minimal value.
That's right.
You know,
it takes more of your time than it's worth.
Yeah. So the ability to get that ZR2 Bison or the, you know, the, what is it? The AT4X.
Yeah. AEV.
2500 Bison.
Yeah.
Like
all
that. The crazy, you know, from the factory.
With huge payload and everything else.
Yeah. Like you could literally just put the camper in it and go.
Or another great example is the new Lexus GX550.
The Overtrail and everything.
It's amazing. And the Overtrail Trail Plus, it's like big tires, locker, you know, long travel, like.
Yeah. And
really, you know, space efficient interior.
Where people miss the point of all of this is that it is factory engineered and they're very, very capable. You know, but
all the durability testing, the anti-corrosion, all the safety stuff works.
All of these principles of overlanding that we've been talking about for a very long time are now just available from the factory.
Yep.
You're not having to look to the aftermarket.
That's right.
You know, but the big mistake that people make is they say, oh, it's got 35s. I've got to put 37s on it. Or like, you know, it's got 37s on it. So I've got to put 40s or this or that or whatever. You know, just don't listen to those idiots on the internet. These vehicles are so capable.
They are.
You will like, you know, I just spent some time with the Defender 130 Outbound.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm not going to call that a factory Overlander, but I guess it's as close as equivalent Land Rover gets.
Yeah, for Land Rover.
You know, that vehicle doesn't have aggressive tires. It doesn't have any lift. It doesn't, you know, it's kind of Tahoe-sized.
Yep.
And the things that I was able to do with that vehicle...
Shocking.
...are shocking. Things that you would never... Like, you are doing sport four-wheel driving.
Yeah.
And that vehicle is on the less capable end of what a lot of these vehicles can do now.
But still, you push a button, it lifts itself 2.5 inches in the air.
Yeah.
You can get a factory winch on it. It has an 1,800, 1,900 pound payload.
Even looking at like a stock Wrangler Rubicon now,
yeah.
The things that you can do with those completely stock exceed the capability of 99% of drivers.
And probably the ultimate example of what we're talking about is the Grenadier. I mean,
yeah.
it is an entire car company that is made, that it was started to build overland vehicles.
Yeah.
And they're crushing it. Like, they are selling them like hotcakes in North America and around the world.
And you don't need to do anything. Well,
they look good. I mean, like, if you see one on a narrow 35, it's like, ooh, that looks really, really good.
Yeah.
So like, I would be tempted to put a slightly taller tire on there, but like, that was the reason why we didn't mess with it when we did Africa. We wanted to show that, like, out of the box, you just go drive across the continent and it was fine.
Yeah.
Like, literally not a single failure.
Yeah. I go back to the first car I built, the Discovery One, and I specifically remember they were 31.8-inch tall tires and recreational four-wheel driving.
Yeah, which is also super fun, but it's a version of sport, and there's times that you need 40s to do whatever that trail is. But I think the one thing that I come back to on the factory Overlanders is if your goal is to travel – and you have the resources, you can go buy a vehicle from the lot and do max warranty on it and go drive it around the world for the next however many years, and you bring it back and nothing has changed other than you probably had to change out the tires at some point because they wore out, but it's ready to go. And we talked about these lightweight campers. So imagine, like, again, the AT4X AEV from GMC, and you put a GoFast on the top of it and you leave.
Yeah. Think about that. You know, there's a value to the time as well.
And you're not traveling when you're building your vehicle. You're not able to spend money on travel when you're spending money on accessories.
Yeah.
So maybe just really, like you said, needs versus wants. If you need to travel, if it's part of you and you desire that, remove all the points of friction that you can to getting out there and having those experiences.
The cool thing is that if you decided right now you wanted to leave next week to drive to Ushuaia, you could actually do it. Where before it took, and this is maybe the summary of all of this.
The true game changer.
Ten years ago, you would have had to buy a vehicle, you would have had to have found one of the two or three shops in the country that could outfit it. You'd have to track down all these components, buy all these components, you know, build a camper or find the roof tent, find all of these components.
Yep.
You'd have to figure out the visas. You'd have to figure out how you're going to communicate. You'd have to figure out where you're going to camp. You can, I would say within a week, if you were determined and you just could write checks, you could go to pretty much any Chevy dealer, get a Grenadier or whatever, buy a Scout camper, throw a roof rack on the Grenadier with a roof tent.
Yeah.
And just go, you know? You just leave because you can now do these things while you're going. Like, it's true. So much less planning.
Yeah.
And I just think that, like, those factory Overland vehicles, like...
Yeah, like if you're living in New York City, you, like, swing by OK Four-Wheel Drive or Mainline Overland... And they put an Alucab camper on the top of your Grenadier, and then you just keep going, and you're done.
You can buy the rest of the stuff on Amazon Prime.
it can be sitting at your next campsite.
Yeah,
for the things that you really find that you're doing without.
And I think that that's cool. Obviously, doing that's not cheap. You know, you can do these trips on any kind of budget.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it is surprising to me. I always like to bring it back. Like, you know, we always advocate you don't need the stuff. And yeah, we're kind of talking about buying all the stuff. You know, you can do this in a, well, I was going to say a $2,500 old 4Runner, but I don't know if that exists anymore.
Probably not. But think about it, that those, that AT4X AEV in 2 or 3 years is going to be much more affordable.
Yeah.
And it's going to have fairly low miles. It'll still be under warranty because they have a 60,000 mile warranty on them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then you still go.
Yeah. And exactly. And think about all the turnkey trucks that have been built now.
Yeah.
Like you just see this stuff on Facebook Marketplace now.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm seeing AT campers and TFCs on Facebook Marketplace. Like I did not think that we were going to be there.
Yeah, we are.
You know.
Yeah, we are definitely there. So many game changers. And for those that are listening, if you think that there's another game changer that you've encountered that you want us to know about, please reach out to us. Probably the best way is on Instagram. And
yeah,
you're Matt Explorer. So on to Matt Explorer and send Matt all of your DMs.
Yep.
Or if you want to reach out to me, scott.a.brady. We'd love to hear about your game changers or the ways that you've used some of the ones that we've mentioned. Or if you completely disagree with our list and you have another list of your own, we'd love to hear it. But thanks, Matt. It's good to be back. Good to be back on the podcast with you. So now it feels good. And we thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.